What if everything we believe about morality is wrong? What if our most cherished values, goodness, compassion, humility, actually originated not from divine wisdom or rational thought, but from psychological resentment and power struggles? This is the explosive thesis Friedrich Nietzsche presents in On the Genealogy of Morals, a work that continues to unsettle readers more than a century after its publication. While virtually unknown when published in 1887, Nietzsche's radical dissection of moral values would eventually influence figures from Michel Foucault to Jordan Peterson and even Sigmund Freud, though he was reluctant to admit it. What makes this work so enduring is Nietzsche's uncanny ability to peel back the layers of our moral pretensions and expose the uncomfortable truths beneath, truths we're still struggling to confront today. Good originally meant noble or aristocratic, not kind or selfless. Through etymology, Nietzsche shows that across Indo-European languages, it was the powerful's self-designation. Ancient aristocrats created moral distinction by calling themselves good and commoners bad. Greek nobles used eslos, good, for noble-born, and kakos, bad, for commoners. This master morality emerged from self-affirmation of power. Jewish priests later executed what Nietzsche calls the most spiritual revenge by inverting these values, declaring the suffering as good and the powerful as evil. This slave revolt in morality created our familiar good-evil distinction. While master morality springs from self-affirmation, slave morality begins with negation. This inversion created new psychological depth. When unable to act on aggression, humans developed introspection and conscience, creating a complex inner world. How did forgetful animals evolve into promise-keeping beings? Nietzsche traces this transformation through blood and pain, the brutal prehistory of morality we've forgotten. Forgetfulness isn't passive, but an active faculty of repression, creating mental space for new experiences. Early societies made humans calculable through harsh mnemotechnics. Only that which never ceases to hurt stays in the memory. Through punishment, moral obligations were seared into human consciousness. The German words Schuld, guilt, and Schulden, debts, reveal a crucial link. When debtors defaulted, creditors gained the right to inflict suffering, a transaction producing pleasure. To see others suffer does one good, Nietzsche observes, to make others suffer even more. This spectacle of suffering persisted from Roman times through public executions. The bad conscience emerged when humans entered peaceful society. Like sea animals forced onto land, their aggressive instincts became useless. Unable to discharge aggression outward, these instincts turned inward, what Nietzsche calls the internalization of man. Through this self-torture, humans developed an inner life. Nietzsche explored a fascinating paradox. Why would life contradict itself through self-denial, chastity, poverty, and humility? For artists, ascetic ideals merely reflect others' values. Philosophers embrace them for practical reasons. Poverty and solitude create ideal working conditions, their desert serving as a workroom. The ascetic priest embodies these ideals most powerfully, using them as instruments of control. The priest gives meaning to the suffering of the weak by framing it as punishment for sin. As Nietzsche notes, man, the bravest of animals and the one most accustomed to suffering, does not repudiate suffering as such. He desires it, provided he is shown a meaning for it. Humans prefer even meaningless meaning to no meaning, would rather will nothingness than not will. The ascetic ideal preserved human will by providing direction, even towards self-denial. Modern science, rather than opposing this ideal, represents its latest incarnation. Scientists maintain the same absolute faith in truth that defined religious devotion. It is still a metaphysical faith upon which our faith in science rests. What psychological mechanisms develop in those who feel powerless yet crave superiority? Nietzsche explores this through resentment, a creative form of resentment that, unlike ordinary anger, festers and transforms into moral judgments. The resentful person develops in secret, turning personal grievances into ethical principles. Unable to respond directly to perceived injuries, they create moral systems that condemn the strong while elevating suffering as noble. This psychology explains the weak's insistence on free will and moral responsibility. If the strong simply act according to their nature, a bird of prey cannot help being a bird of prey, then moral condemnation becomes meaningless. By claiming the strong choose their actions, the weak reframe power's non-expression as moral virtue. To demand of strength that it should not express itself as strength is just as absurd as to demand of weakness that it should express itself as strength, Nietzsche writes. Religious asceticism, moral systems, and democratic ideals emerge as sophisticated expressions of resentment, transforming powerlessness into a virtue that has shaped human civilization. What happens when truth questions itself? Nietzsche challenges Western philosophy's assumption of truth's absolute worth, asking, what in us really wants truth? The world to truth stems from the ascetic ideal, the belief that truth has unconditional value regardless of consequences. Yet this will turns against itself. It is still a metaphysical faith upon which our faith in science rests, he writes. Even we godless anti-metaphysicians still take our fire from the thousand-year-old faith. Christianity's emphasis on truthfulness becomes its undoing. The moral demand for honesty forces us to admit that morality rests on fictions. Christian morality itself forbids itself the lie involved in the belief in God. This self-destruction becomes the great spectacle reserved for the next two centuries of Europe. Without the ascetic ideal providing meaning, humans face a void. Man does not repudiate suffering as such. He desires it, provided he is shown a meaning for it. The collapse of traditional morality threatens this meaning, risking nihilism. Humanity must now face creating new values without absolute truths or divine guidance. Nietzsche's critique opens possibilities for new values better suited to human flourishing. His gay science celebrates human potential rather than constraining it. The Greeks offer a model, acknowledging human complexity without demanding impossible purity. They attributed inexplicable actions to divine influence, allowing responsibility without crushing guilt. This view transcends rigid good-evil categories, embracing the full spectrum of human experience. Actions can be both creative and destructive, their value context-dependent. Nietzsche evaluates values based on whether they serve life rather than abstract principles. What is good? Everything that heightens the feeling of power, the will to power, power itself in man. What is bad? Everything born of weakness. This naturalistic approach judges values by their impact on human vitality. He envisions the sovereign individual who creates values through genuine self-mastery rather than inheriting them uncritically. This represents authentic responsibility, the conscious creation and upholding of one's own values. This new valuation demands strength and honesty, facing uncertainty while forging personal values. The reward is genuine autonomy, not the illusion of following predetermined rules. When judging good or evil, ask, where did this judgment originate? Does it serve life? And, crucially, is it truly yours?